This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
And do take note of the gay colours of more upmarket security systems.
Hello and welcome to another Series 5 episode of Keeping Up Appearances, the luxury podcast. This is the companion podcast for exploring the world of Hyacinth Bouquet in the hit BBC sitcom Keeping Up Appearances. My name's Jonathan Vernon-Smith, and with me is someone who's never been disappointing, even as a Roman. It's William Hanson.
Hello, Jonathan and I are here for the final series because, as you know by now, we absolutely love Hyacinth Bouquet and her world in Keeping Up Appearances.
In each episode of this luxury podcast, William and I take you through an episode of the BBC sitcom delving deep into the world of the bouquets. And today is the fifth episode of the series, Skis. Can you take us through the synopsis, please, William?
I can.
Lovely.
Hyacinth spots a pair of skis on the roof rack of an upmarket neighbour's car, and this immediately gives her the idea of buying Richard a pair for his birthday. This will mean that they will be able to drive about with them on their roof rack and thereby impress other people. Unfortunately, they have to borrow Violet's roof rack, and during the process of getting the skis over there, things start to go pear-shaped. Not helped by the fact that Hyacinth insists on giving two ladies a lift, which they don't need. She then discovers that Violet and Bruce's relationship has completely fallen apart. Rose also has men problems, which makes Daisy and Onslow consider their own day-to-day lives. And there we go.
There we go.
It's a nice episode.
It's solid.
I don't think there's a bit of hesitancy there.
It's not my favourite, I'll be honest with you.
Okay. Of series five. Yes, I think there are stronger ones.
Oh, yeah.
Alarmed.
And I think, to be honest, and we'll get to it, but the end, for me, is a little bit weak. But,
yes,
you know, let's be positive about this. There are some wonderful moments.
There are. And it starts, as so many of them do, outside Wainy Elm. But this time, Richard is in the garden pruning his roses.
He is. Hyacinth comes out. She's rather concerned that he doesn't look as if he's enjoying what he's doing.
But she does what I thought was quite nice, is that she starts with a look of love to Richard. There's a real love there. And I think, again, that maybe lacks a little bit. And in later episodes in this series, you know, there are a few comments made. But in that moment, she loves him.
She does. But she's concerned that because it looks as if he doesn't enjoy it, people will think that he doesn't enjoy it. And if he doesn't enjoy it, why wouldn't they have a gardener?
Exactly.
I mean, the fact they can't afford a gardener is another matter. That's why he should look as if he's enjoying it.
This is probably the biggest example of literally keeping up appearances.
Yes.
In that you have to look like you can afford a gardener, but you don't because you love gardening so much.
Do you have a gardener?
No. Can you afford a gardener?
Could I afford a gardener? I wouldn't want to afford a gardener.
Do you enjoy gardening?
No, I don't enjoy gardening.
But do you look as though you enjoy gardening?
But you know when I came across Just Jack?
Yes.
The decorator.
Mm.
So a bit like I always used to do my own decorating because I felt as if I couldn't justify paying someone else to do something that I could do myself. I feel a bit the same with gardening.
Okay.
I don't enjoy it really, but I just can't justify. While I'm a fit and athletic young man, I...
didn't say a word.
You didn't have to say a word. Your face said it all. While I'm a fit and athletic young man, I can't justify paying someone else to do it for me.
No. Okay. And
I can still hoe.
Well, that's good to know.
I saw a comment on our, you know, the way people can leave reviews for our podcast.
Oh, yes.
Someone complained that we both laugh too much and it goes too quiet, which is not good with an audio recording.
Oh. Sorry.
Oh, dear.
Funny. Is it maybe with your garden that you haven't, fat like Jack, you just haven't found the right person? And then when you find the right person...
Oh, yeah.
...that does the garden, you're going to go, why have I been bothering to do my own?
Maybe. Maybe. Yes. Who would be good?
Charlie Dimmock. She could come in.
I don't want Charlie Dimmock in my garden.
Tommy Walsh.
Tommy Walsh. Any other 1990s gardening experts from BBC TV you'd like to talk about?
Oh, Christine from The One Show. Can you remember her?
No.
She'd be good.
Alan Titchmarsh.
Hate it.
Now, I would like Alan Titchmarsh. Kim Jong-un hates him.
Yes. What was that all about?
I'd love to think of him in my garden, hoeing like a thing possessed with Kim Jong-un, seething with rage.
Feel his Pyongyang rising.
That's true.
Anyway, the smiling thing reminds me of when I, on my other podcast, I've talked about when I was detained by the Swiss authorities.
Oh, yes.
I phoned only a few months ago. But it reminds me of when I was released from by the Swiss authorities. I did nothing wrong. I should just hasten to add for those that don't know the full story. And I was then escorted to my gate at Geneva Airport. And I had to make them smile and laugh in case anyone saw me. That they knew that I was not up to no good.
Yes.
It was just maybe I got some sort of advanced diplomatic
VIP
protection.
VIP security, yeah.
So we've all done it.
Yeah, quite.
If we can't afford a gardener, that's all the more reason why we should look as though we can afford a gardener.
The Calladines drive past.
Yes. In
Or is it the Calladines or the Carradines?
Carradines.
It's the Carradines.
And Jonathan, I hope you're proud. I wrote down the brand of car.
Oh, good. Right, what is it?
A Saab.
A Saab what?
A red one.
It's green.
Oh, is it? All I wrote down was Saab.
It's a green Saab 9000. Registration number M945KWK.
I did, look, I got the brand. That's more than
you
I
did. Well
get.
Done. Well okay. done. But I can't believe you didn't even get the colour.
No.
However, I looked it up.
Oh, right.
And it would have been...
Of course you did.
When this episode was recorded, it would have been a brand new car. It was registered in March of 1995, although it is now Sorn, and I gather hasn't changed ownership since 2010.
Oh.
So there we go.
Okay.
Quite what happened to the Carradine Saab?
Maybe you could buy the Carradine Saab.
I could do. I could do. I quite like Saabs.
Yeah.
They don't make them anymore.
No, what happened to them?
I don't know. They stopped making them. I think they make something else. Aeroplanes or something.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay.
But maybe, they don't make cars anymore.
Maybe the Carradines have got a private jet.
Maybe.
Seamless.
Mrs. Carradine was a Baxter's biscuit, apparently.
Yes, we've had a Proctor's pickle, and now we've got a Baxter's biscuit.
Quite.
Which is nice. And Hyacinth gets parped out the road because she goes into waves so
she
dramatically.
Does. Oh! She's furious. And she's very furious because she thinks of how furious Sheridan would be, somebody honking at his mummy.
Unmannerly oaf. Sheridan would be furious if he knew that strangers were honking at his mummy.
Over in the other side of town, we have Onslow's sitting room, and Rose is wondering about life after death. And I wondered, Jonathan, do you believe in reincarnation?
Seriously? Seriously, you want this conversation now?
Yeah.
No, I don't.
You don't?
No.
You don't think you're coming back as something else?
I hope not. Once is enough. No.
Oh.
No. Why do you?
I don't know. I'd like to think maybe there is something else. But then, you know, you might come back as an ant or something.
Oh, yes.
Or something a bit disappointing.
Yes. Right. If you were going to come back as something, what would you like to come back as?
A head of state. I think.
Head of state.
In a monarchy, not in a republic.
Or Kim Jong-un.
Yes.
You could come back as Kim Jong-un.
Kim Jong-du. But that's, I don't know if they speak French in Korea.
You're kind of dressed a little bit like Kim Jong-un today. When are we going to talk about your outfit you're wearing?
Go on, talk. Well, you talk about my outfit and we'll start on your glasses.
I'm gearing up for it, yeah.
Okay, good.
So when did you plan this outfit?
So why don't you describe to the listeners what I'm wearing?
You're dressed as I was dressed when I was 4 years old and I was a page boy for my auntie and uncle. You're wearing a page boy's outfit.
No, I'm wearing chinos, navy chinos. Is that all right with that?
Oh, you see, I'd call them action slacks.
Okay, well, action slacks, chinos.
Yeah.
From Galeries Lafayette, because I have a problem in the trouser department, and I can only buy trousers in New York or Paris.
Why is that?
Because I've got funny calves. I do.
What's wrong with your calves?
Massive.
Look like they've swallowed a grapefruit.
They do. They do. Two grapefruits.
Right.
And no British trouser fits me.
Do you know why that is? I've noticed.
Is it because I have what is sometimes called mincer's gait?
No, it's because you walk on your tiptoes.
Yeah, well, that's what I said.
You walk on your tiptoes and that builds the calf muscles. Yes.
Well, it's hereditary because my grandmother, not etiquette granny, the other granny.
She got calves like Fatima Whitbread.
She did. And do you know where I found that out? I didn't know, because she always wore skirts. Do you know where I found that out?
Wow.
At her funeral.
How did you find out?
It wasn't an open casket.
Look at the size of her calves.
It was that my cousin made a reference to
Did they
it.
Have to expand the coffin at the coffin?
No, it was that my cousin made a reference to, and we all get our large calves from Grandma. So I discovered that it was from Grandma.
Right, that's lovely.
So, yeah.
Back at Wayne Elm.
Oh, we haven't done the top of my outfit.
Oh, yes.
Which is the pièce de résistance. It's a navy cotton wool double-breasted cardigan waistcoat.
It is. It's lovely.
Yes, and a white shirt.
White shirt with button-down collars.
Yes.
And just a smidge of makeup on your collar.
You'll be pleased to know, because I'm speaking at an event this evening, I've got a fresh shirt in over there.
Thank goodness for that.
Yeah.
And I'm getting in with the comments before you start on my glasses, because I know we're going to get to that.
We'll get to that,
and
yes.
I've got plenty of ammunition still left up my sleeve. Back at Wayne Elm.
Although, but just final thing about Onslow.
What?
New T-shirt.
What?
Do you notice he's in a different outfit? He's in that green T-shirt. First time we've seen that.
I had not noticed that.
Yeah, he's normally in the vest, but he's in a T-shirt this time.
Is he?
Yeah.
Well, I shall have to go back and watch. So back at Wayne Elm, it's nighttime.
Yes.
And Hyacinth is bringing a large box in from her back door.
Very, very...
Going like two schoolboys.
Very clumsily.
She is. Richard wants to know what's going on.
And she says she's emptying the pedal bin.
Yes, that's right.
Do you like, what do you like in a bin? Do you like a pedal bin? What? I thought bin chat would be good.
What the hell do you mean?
Do you like a flip lid?
You are literally, you're going there, are you?
Yeah. Do you like a pull-out recycling? Different compartments or a separate bin for each?
Are we talking the kitchen?
Yes.
Okay. So kitchen, I have a luxury drawer bin.
Oh, it's in the... Yeah.
You pull out the drawer and I have two bins.
Yep.
I don't use the second one. I use it as a storage facility. But the first one is there and I have a Spanish bag.
Lavender.
Lavender scented. In fact, I think at the moment I'm using the roll you gave me.
Oh.
Yes.
Nice.
Carrefour.
Yes.
So I have that, and that's what I put everything in.
But where does all your recycling go?
That goes in my recycling bin.
Oh, where's that?
Outside.
Ah, okay.
And outside my back door.
I'm sorry to that person on iTunes.
Are we going to fall about every time we mention back doors? So immature. It is outside my back door. Oh dear.
Hyacinth goes to hide the skis. So sorry. Sheridan, we see Sheridan's bedroom. Talking of back doors.
Oh, come on, William, this is ridiculous.
I'm just checking the letterbox to make sure we haven't received any more leaflets about cheap double glazing.
So we see Sheridan's bedroom.
We do.
Well, I assume it's Sheridan's bedroom because it looks childlike, and I think that fits the narrative that Hyacinth is keeping Sheridan mentally as a child.
Yes.
Not wanting him to grow up. And she hides the skis under the bed.
She does.
And it's the same room. We talked about this a couple of episodes ago. It's the same room that Ian Lavender, the alarm salesman, goes in, but we don't see it at that point. We just see him go in.
Yeah.
But geographically, that is that room.
Yes. And, of course, we've learnt that it is Richard's birthday the following day, which is very crucial.
But he's not excited because he normally gets slippers.
That's true.
And he's like, well, why get excited about slippers?
The phone rings and it's Rose calling to ask if there is life after death.
And Hyacinth then, when she goes back to Richard, says that they're going to be an entity for eternity. Richard looks slightly forlorn at that.
Quite. Onslow and Daisy are also in bed, and they're discussing afterlife.
Yes, and will they be slimmer?
Yes. They suspect they probably will. Well, Onslow does, because they'll probably have fewer chips there. I hope in the afterlife they'll have more chips.
Yes.
I love a chip.
Do you
like a chip?
I do like a chip.
Mm. What's your favourite chip?
I like it thick cut. How about you?
Anyway, they come.
That is daytime now.
It is.
We're
it's
in
the
Wayne
Elm morning of Richard's birthday.
And Hyacinth is making a big deal about what this present is. And there are lots of noises coming through the... from the hall, and then the present sort of slowly emerges through the door. She's clearly also being handed the prop by some stagehand. You can sort of see it. And it's quite nicely wrapped, to be fair. Do you wrap well? Are you a good wrapper?
As long as it's square, okay. Then yes.
Would you be able to wrap skis?
I would find it hard to wrap skis, as indeed I found it very hard to wrap a wok.
Did a wok not come in a box?
I bought my father. He's got a new luxury induction hob.
Uh-oh.
And he needed a new luxury induction wok for his induction hob. So I bought him a new wok and it didn't come in a box.
Mm.
So I had to wrap it. Have you ever tried wrapping a wok?
No.
It's quite hard.
What was wrong with it?
Well, it just looked a bit... It looked a bit childlike by the time I'd wrapped it up. It didn't look executive.
And you probably knew what it was before he unwrapped it.
It was fairly obvious what it was, yeah. It wasn't my finest wrapping work, no, admittedly. No.
Well, that's good to know. Hyacinth is more excited, I think, than Richard. Very excited.
She is. She's thrilled at the idea. We cut to Liz and Emmett, who are discussing going to wish Richard a happy birthday, which I think is rather nice, isn't it, for your neighbours?
To come over and sort of say something.
I don't think my neighbours have ever knocked on my front door to say happy birthday, so I think it's rather nice.
Have you ever had a neighbour knock on your back door? There is a reference to, in Emmett's, Hyacinth being the creature from the Black Lagoon, which I looked it up, was a 1954 American horror film about the Gill Man. And actually, when you Google creature from the Black Lagoon, it doesn't look very scary.
No.
By today's standards. It looks like a man in a gill sort of monster suit.
Richard opens the box to discover that Hyacinth has bought him skis.
Yeah, and he's a bit confused.
Well, as you would be.
Yes.
I mean, why on earth would he want skis? It becomes apparent that the reason that Hyacinth has bought him the skis is because she thinks they'll look very good on the car, a bit like the Carradines.
Yes, and I quite like that because sort of there was no mention of the skis on the Carradines' car, and it's just a subtle little detail that obviously we pick up on because we've watched this episode a million times. But if you are coming to this fresh, you wouldn't have seen that. But it's a good bit of writing, I think, there.
Yes. They decide that actually it's necessary to go to Violet and Bruce's to borrow their rack for the skis.
Because you can't just stick the skis on the roof.
No, you can't.
No, they're going to fall off.
Quite.
And it is one of my favourite moments in this is when Hyacinth keeps walking into the skis from the front. And she gets what I have diplomatically written down here as a front wedgie.
Frankenstein created a monster. And it sings.
The phone goes, it's Rose, who wants the vicar's number. Hyacinth says that she can bring the vicar to her house as Richard can show him his skis.
And Rose thinks that the vicarage might be unfriendly. Hyacinth does say, and actually I sort of paused it and thought about it, that, oh, you don't imagine everyone who has skis on their car actually skis. And I did think, I bet there is some truth in that. Because skiing is sort of seen as this sort of social marker, maybe less so now. But sort of the girls that were sent to finishing school, the ones that went to Switzerland and Europe, you know, you did skiing as part of it. And it was this sort of terribly sophisticated thing. It was sport without being too sort of sweaty. You just sort of slalomed down a hill a little bit. And I bet you there are people out there who have bought skis to go on the car to look like they go skiing.
Have you ever been skiing?
Once successfully, I was 6.
Right.
And then when we went back when I was 8, I said to my parents, I said, if I'm skiing, this is before we got there, I don't want to go to ski school because I don't want to ski with the other children. So they said, you can come and learn with their instructor.
Mm.
James, my brother, went off to ski school.
Mm.
And on day one, I was waiting with my father and the ski instructor outside the shop for my mother to finish taking James to ski school. And as we were waiting for my mother to come back, I fainted from the altitude. And I fainted onto the concrete and dislodged half my teeth.
Oh, William.
And I had to be airlifted to hospital in Innsbruck.
Of course you did. You are such a dramatic person.
Yes, and I had to do 2 nights in Innsbruck Hospital whilst my parents got in the car and drove from Obergurgl, which is where we were skiing, through Undergurgl, all the way to Innsbruck. And I was literally in a private ward. Well, it wasn't private, it was actually a public ward, but it wasn't very busy. So it was sort of on my own for 2 days. And my parents could visit for a couple of hours. And they just gave me a little water syringe to play with and a bucket. This is the nurses.
So have you got dentures?
No, they were sort of,
they
a lot of them
back.
Were, yeah, sort of baby teeth or, you know. So it's fine. No, it's all my own teeth.
Oh, okay.
But I say I was 8. I might have been younger. But it was... And after that, then the third time we went skiing, I'd been to my friend Ashley's party the day before and got the stomach bug that was going around. So by the time we arrived in Courchevel, I was violently ill and spent the whole holiday in bed. And then the fourth time I decided I'm not going to ski.
I don't need to have that hideous experience to know that I would hate skiing.
Yes, it's awful.
I will never, ever go skiing. I couldn't think of anything worse.
No.
And I definitely would not want skis attached to my car.
No, what a waste.
Absolute waste. We cut to the scene where Richard is now trying to get the skis into the car.
And there's a really nice line, a very dry line, where they're making some reference to going to see Violet and Bruce. And Emmett says, I didn't know they live that far north. I just think it's a funny, dry line.
Hyacinth appears from the front door.
In what outfit? We've seen it before.
It's the very colourful one, isn't
yes,
it? Multicoloured. It's the one that my grandmother
yes.
used to own.
And where did we see her wear that?
On the QE2!
Exactly. Yes, it's her tea outfit that she's in for a little bit.
She announces they're off to my sister Violet's. She's the one with the Mercedes, the sauna and room for a pony. Because at that moment, one of the skis goes up her bottom.
Yes, indeed. And we get that nice high note.
Yes.
Which is lovely.
It is good.
Over to Onslow's, Rose wants to know what she wears for a vicar, whilst Daisy and Onslow play cards. And Rose misses companionship. And there are, again, some really good underrated Onslow lines here. No wonder your bed is lonely. You're always in someone else's. So I think that's a nice... It's a fun line.
It is. I notice you often pick up on the dialogue from Onslow.
Yeah.
I often find the Onslow scenes pass me by a bit. I'm waiting to get back to Hyacinth.
It's because I've done a podcast for 6.5 years with Jordan North.
Oh, ouch.
No, I don't mean that in a... No, he's funny, but he's more like
Are
Onslow.
Are you suggesting Jordan is like Onslow?
A little bit.
Have you told him that?
Yes.
And how does he feel about that?
Oh, nice. That's what he says.
Richard, please be more careful.
I think that's the highest note you've reached in quite a while.
Richard and Hyacinth set off.
Yes.
With the skis that are sticking out of the window of the Rover 216.
Mm, yes, and Richard is supposedly making difficulties. And I also love, there's earlier on in the sitting room, when they're talking about, not everyone that has skis on their car skis. If everyone, I think the line is, not everyone who has a feather in their hat is a partridge. Cut to her hat, which has a feather in it. Now, I don't know whether that was on purpose as a callback to that line, but I sort of like that little detail.
Mm. On the way, they see the two Miss Pillsworths.
Yes.
Two old sisters. Hinge and Bracket-esque, I think.
They are a little bit, but sort of maybe less, how would you describe Hinge and Bracket? In fact, people may not know who Hinge and Bracket were.
Well, they were men.
Men who dressed as ladies for light entertainment on the BBC.
Miss Pillsworths are not men.
No. They are Lois Penson and Claire Kelly.
I knew you would have looked them up.
Yes, Hinge and Bracket. They were sort of... It wasn't really drag. Not by today's standards, but it was men dressing as women.
So, you know, I have... you know my friend Ernie, who sadly died... So he used to run a club and they used to book Hinge and Bracket in their early days to perform.
Yeah. And it was sort of gentle. They were very talented musicians.
Yeah.
Look them up on YouTube. There's not a lot on YouTube, but there's bits. Mm. And I think they're really, really good. And sort of Dame Hilda Bracket is sort of slightly more extrovert. Mm-hmm. And Evadne Hinge.
Dame Evadne Hinge.
Doctor Evadne Hinge.
Doctor Evadne Hinge, Dame Hilda Bracket, that's it.
Yep. Is slightly more restrained.
Portly.
Yes. Maybe. But they're great.
There's a nice line, because Hyacinth says, when she sees the two Miss Pillsworths, that she'd invited them to one of her candlelight suppers, but they couldn't come because the older of the two is allergic to naked flame. And she says... I promised you'd extinguish her straight away.
And I think that line is a bit lost. It gets no reaction.
No reaction
from the audience.
No.
And it's a really funny line.
It is a funny line.
This old woman on fire.
Yes.
Which is a bit Miss Havisham.
With Richard dousing her with water.
Hopefully not petrol.
Why would they have petrol at a Cadillac supper?
Well, I don't know. It's dark. You can't see what you're doing. Well, it's like this actually, talking of fire, again, we've talked about him before. Our luxury producer, who used to be my luxury flatmate, we had a fire. And the one thing in Manchester at the flat, and the one thing he handed me, because he couldn't see, is actually exactly this what I've
Why
just described.
Why could he not see?
Because all the power had gone out. We turned off all the lights. Oh. And so I said, go and get... I think someone practical said, go and get powder to throw on. It's an electrical fire. So he went into the cupboard and found the flour. But he handed me the self-raising flour, because he couldn't see all my identical... you know, labelled containers.
Yeah.
And self-raising flour has bicarbonate of soda in it, which turns out is not what you throw on naked flame.
What happened to it? No.
And we ended up with a lovely rustic loaf. But the fire continued.
Hyacinth bullies the old girls into the car, and they nearly face a little bit of decapitation from the skis as they try to get in.
Yes, and I wondered, one of the Miss Pillsworths, the sort of the slightly daffier one, talks to Richard assuming he's the chauffeur, is what I thought, and forgetting the actual arrangement.
She says, doesn't she, how long have you driven for this woman?
Yes. And I thought maybe that's because she thinks he is the chauffeur.
I think she probably does.
Yeah.
They end up in the front of the car because there's no way the two of them can get in the back of the car with the skis. And one of them is clearly sitting on the gear stick.
Yes.
I mean, it looks to be firmly up her bottom.
It does, yes. And Hyacinth is lodged in the back.
She is.
And she's talking about, oh, you must come over and try my gentleman's relish.
Yes.
Have you ever tried gentleman's relish?
Not frequently.
No, it's got fish in it, so we won't.
Has
like
it really?
Yeah. Anchovies, yeah. It's disgusting.
I don't go near anything fishy. Oh! I'd better get that. It's probably someone very important.
We'll be back in a moment.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Welcome to Sincerely Sloan, presented by Uninterrupted. I'm your host, professional tennis player, wife, parent, and entrepreneur, Sloan Stevens. As an athlete and as a person, my journey has had a lot of twists and turns, from moments of adversity and doubt to unimaginable triumph and satisfaction. Throughout the season, I'm joined by some of the biggest names in sports, entertainment, culture, and a few members of my tribe. Our conversations keep it real and push it past skin deep. We reveal the perspectives, routines, and products that allow each of us to show up at our best. Join me on my journey of self-discovery and many, many laughs along the way. Sincerely, Sloan.
Welcome back, Bucketheads. We're still discussing the fifth episode of the fifth and final series, Skis. We've abducted the Miss Pillsworths, and we now arrive at the village and the church. And the vicar is singing like a rhinestone cowboy. I don't know what a rhinestone cowboy is.
He's also digging.
Yes, with his hoe.
And they're talking about... has he got a hoe or is he... No, I think he's got a spade.
I was going with it to bring back the hoe analogy.
Okay, but you need to be factually correct.
Well, I need to really put my glasses on to see that. Talking of glasses. Oh.
Here we go.
Jonathan, as you have said previously in this earlier in this series, you are getting to that age.
30, I'm going blind.
31, where you need glasses. And which high-end store did you buy these glasses from?
I went to a very exclusive opticians.
Okay. And describe them for us, because you haven't got them today.
No, because I forgot them because I was reading some small print. I mean, I should explain, I've decided I hate them.
Okay. Why? Do you hate the design or hate wearing glasses?
No, I hate wearing them.
Okay.
So I can't wear them for several reasons, because firstly, they are only for close-up work.
Okay. And what's wrong with your vision?
I just can't read small print.
Okay.
It all goes blurred.
But you can see over into the distance.
Long distance is absolutely fine.
Okay.
It's only very small print up close I can't read.
Mm.
So these new glasses, they work perfectly for reading small print.
Yeah.
But anything further away, so for example, where you're sitting here, about a metre away from me now, you would be all blurred.
Oh.
So I have to either put them on the end of my nose like Victor Meldrew.
Or like Dr. Evadne Hinge.
Like Dr. Evadne Hinge. Or I have to keep taking them on and off.
Mm.
But with headphones on that I wear for work, I can't put them on easily and take them off.
No.
So they just irritate me. And I find if I leave them on and I try and cope with the fact that I'm looking at you, yep. I just feel sick.
How about some pince-nez you could get?
What are they?
The ones that balance on the end of your nose and they don't have sort of the arms.
Well, maybe I could go for those.
Or laser eye surgery.
Laser eye surgery. Can they do just the bottom half of your eye then?
Possibly. But I've got, as we're going back to the Switzerland thing, I've got a USB clicker with a laser in it. So if you want me to come round...
What, laser my eyes with your
and
clicker?
And do it for you?
No, thank you.
No?
Okay. Very much. No. But when I sent you a photo of me in these glasses, you were less than positive.
No, well, you looked very handsome. You look very special. The vicar's wife emerges with some tea.
Yes, and they have a bit of tea chat.
Yes, and it's been a whole week without the bucket,
the
bucket woman.
The tea chat I find interesting because they're complaining about the tea bags that the ladies from the church have bought them.
Yeah.
I've also had a bit of tea problems recently.
Oh, really?
Yes, I have.
What's happened to your tea?
So, you know that I love a PG Tips.
Mm.
Call me old-fashioned, but I do. I know you probably drink Fortnum and Mason's.
I don't drink a lot of tea, actually.
No, you don't.
No.
No, but if you did, it'd be Fortnum's.
Yes. Countess Grey.
Of course.
Mm.
And I don't know what's happened to PG Tips. They changed the bags, and I don't like the new tea. So I tried all the different brands of tea to see which one was more suitable to my palate. I've gone back to PG Tips, but this time PG Tips Gold, William.
Oh.
Which I think is the executive PG Tips.
Yes.
From the extra tippy part of the tips. You should try them. They're delicious.
Okay.
Every cup of tea is bright orange in colour.
Ooh, that sounds disgusting.
No, it's lovely. It's exactly the colour you want from a cup of tea. Bright golden orange, like the sun.
Mm. Have you ever done the sort of the cliche about local radio is that everyone talks about biscuits or tea. Have you ever done a phone-in on tea?
Probably. And biscuits.
Yes.
Yeah.
I think I've heard that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Funny.
Custard creams.
Is that your favourite?
No.
What's your favourite biscuit?
Do you want a job?
But they have problems because the ladies' circle buys the tea, and obviously they're too polite to say no.
Yes.
I've written here, I'm not going to ask you, have you ever been in a ladies' circle? But I feel this episode has been difficult enough.
Oh, William.
They're in the car. Hyacinth and Richard are popping into Violet's. I think it's very rude to give people a lift when they don't want it and then do your own thing first. I mean, I think in the grand scheme of things, it's very rude.
It is. She wants to take the Viamasis to Violet's.
Yeah.
So she can show Violet's house off, really,
yeah,
to them.
Basically.
That's what it's all about.
And then there's a lovely accolade. Violet once had tea with the Postmaster General. She still has the plastic spoon. So that's really dull.
I like the fact that as Richard goes to change gear, because the gear sticks up one of the ladies' bottoms... She hits him.
Oh, I didn't notice that.
Yeah, she goes to change gear and she wallops him because obviously he's grabbed her bottom. Have you ever been hit by an old lady?
No, I don't think I have. don't think I've gone near.
I have.
Have you?
Yes.
Who hit you?
When I used to work at Radio Northampton, I did a phone-in programme on old drivers. Should they be taken off the road? That kind of thing.
It shouldn't hit you in the car.
No, as I came out of the studio after the programme, I came out of the studio door, you know, on a bit of a high. We'd had a good show. I was quite happy. Yeah. And as I came
out, chat.
There was this old lady who had a handbag over her shoulder. And she was standing there in reception with a face like thunder. And as I came out of the door, she turned to the receptionist, because she had to come through reception to get out the building. She turned to the receptionist. She said, "Is this him?" And the receptionist said, "Yeah, that's him." With that, she got this handbag off her shoulder and she literally smacked me full on in the face with it. She'd come to the reception of the radio station to smash me in the face with her beige handbag.
Why? Because she took offence at your phone.
She was so furious that she thought I was telling the listeners that people like her shouldn't be driving.
And were you?
Yes.
Wow.
Yeah.
Did it scar you?
No, but it really hurt.
Was it leather?
Well, it was a soft leather. It was a bit like Camhyacin's peep toe sling bags.
Okay.
But I don't know what she had in it.
A brick?
Dumbbell? Something like that. But it really hurt as she whacked it into my face.
You poor thing.
Yeah. William's just looking to see my face is wonky.
Yeah.
Richard seldom goes far without his skis. He likes to be ready for the first flicks.
I'm just a beginner.
We arrive at Violet's, which, I think we sort of have seen this house before. It's Newbold Terraced East in Leamington Spa. Maybe if we ever do, probably not, but if we did another location, little Potter. We could go to Newbold Terraced East.
We could indeed. Unfortunately, things get off to a bad start because as they arrive, Violet and Bruce are clearly in the middle of a row. Violet's on the balcony. Bruce is downstairs. Violet then tips a jug of water all over Bruce's head.
Yeah. And it's the same Bruce now for the rest of the series. We've had different Bruces when we've seen just fleeting glances of him in the past. But now it's John Evitts.
Is it?
Yes, in case you wanted to know.
He remains Bruce, doesn't he?
He does, in three episodes.
Yes. She says to Richard, "Reverse!" She needs to get out of there quickly. She realises this is not a good look.
Yes, and she wants Richard to show the Miss Pillsworths the beauties of the area and the gay colours of the more upmarket security systems.
Lovely.
Which is lovely.
Isn't it hilarious?
So, so funny. It's sort of, the balcony thing, I don't know. Maybe I'm being too deep. It's like the anti-Romeo and Juliet.
Yes, it is.
Isn't
in
it?
Many ways,
yeah.
It is, yeah.
The Juliet Violet is on the balcony cross with the Romeo below.
True.
I don't think they wrote it like that. That's probably coincidental.
No, I think it was just a more convenient place to tip a jug of water over Bruce's head.
But with that jug, did you notice the lovely glass? Some of it most tastefully engraved with a list of injured jockeys.
That's true. Onslow and Daisy arrive in the Cortina. They're going to drop Rose at the Vicar's. And Rose appears in skimpy shorts.
Yes, after Daisy has tried to get a bit jiggy with Onslow, who says he's not a plaything.
Yes.
And Daisy starts going, "My engine's still running,"
yeah.
And does all that. Again, it's the classic Daisy Onslow routine.
It cuts back to Violet's house, and Violet is pouring her heart out to Hyacinth.
But then throwing things at them as well at the same time.
There's a rather tender moment. Have you noticed?
Yeah, she's very sisterly.
Very sisterly. She's talking to Hyacinth, and Hyacinth seems to show genuine kindness to her. But I think it's probably more that Hyacinth is worried she'll lose her own Mercedes.
Yes, you can't walk out on your own Mercedes. Hearts are seldom broken in good residential areas.
Violet wants to talk to a vicar, and Hyacinth says, "I can arrange that," and then gives her a lovely sisterly hug.
Although then suggests that maybe their marriage would be better if she dressed more like a jockey, which is maybe the least practical piece of advice she ever gives.
As they pull out of the drive, Richard's skis fly off the car.
Because Hyacinth has very dramatically gone, "Stop!" Because they've realised they have gone off without Violet.
They've forgotten her.
Yes.
She then appears dressed as a jockey.
Well, with the hat on, with a whip.
Yeah. Meanwhile, Daisy and Rose are trying to fix the cortina that has now broken down.
Mm.
And Onslow is in the car smoking and reading his paper.
Yeah, and they're sort of doing it. It's quite up the women sort of thing. But Rose suggests that the starter motor's gone.
Yeah.
Obviously, jokes about Daisy and Onslow as well.
Quite. Richard and Hyacinth are now at the church with Violet. They've arrived with Violet because they're taking her to see the vicar.
Yes, and in the vicar's kitchen, the vicar is putting up architrave, which, as we have previously discussed...
Coving.
Is common.
It is, I'm afraid.
That's what you have told me, and I have now looked at my coving.
I'm so sorry.
Mentally ripping it out.
It is common.
I don't know if it is.
It is. I have it.
Well, it's definitely common.
But it's common. I'm afraid it is common. And okay. If you've noticed, when he then, at one point, gets quite annoyed, he snaps the coving,
yes.
Showing that it is, in fact, just polystyrene.
Ah, okay. So hang on, my coving's polystyrene?
Probably.
No, I think it's wood.
Wood?
Yes.
I very much doubt it.
I'm going to go and knock my coving when I get home, and it's
Don't
going
do
to
that.
Sound
just
hollow.
Just Jack has painted it.
Well, I'll find an inconspicuous bit and tap it with a clean knuckle.
No. I guarantee you it will be a kind of a cheap cardboardy material.
I'm going to send you a video later of me knocking my coving. Yes.
I quite like the moment. As they pull into the vicarage, have you noticed Hyacinth and Violet are wrestling in the back of the car?
No, I didn't.
Have you not noticed? They're fighting over, I think, the whip. They're kind of wrestling in the back. It's quite funny. And quite why Hyacinth is in the back with her, I don't know.
No.
Because the old girls aren't there, are they?
No, they've gone now. Violet's been quite needy and indecisive. She now doesn't want to look like a jockey.
Yeah. And she has second thoughts about seeing the vicar, so she does a runner, doesn't she, outside his house?
Yes, runs past him.
Hyacinth chases her. Now, this is, you know, I mentioned earlier that the end of this is a bit weak.
Yeah.
But this is quite funny, this bit.
Okay.
Because I find Hyacinth running funny.
She's
just funny, isn't she? The way she runs with her dress on and her shoes, it's just funny.
It is nice.
I could watch her run all day. She's so funny. Rose and Daisy, they kind of arrive in the car.
Pushing it.
Yes, pushing the car. And Violet runs past, followed by Hyacinth.
Yes.
And, I mean, it's just really, really amusing. And Richard pulls up. Hyacinth gets in the car. And the end is, Richard, follow that sister.
And they've sort of encountered the Miss Pillsworths, who are walking the other way, and get very confused. The dialogue to end it is not as good as it could be.
It's weak. If it wasn't for the running, it would be a very weak end.
True.
But the running saves it.
Yes, and we don't like a weak end.
We don't. Watch it back. Rewind it and just watch Hyacinth as she runs down that pavement. Now, if you want to keep up with the bouquets, you can listen to William and me chatting through every episode of Series 1, 2, 3 and 4. You should know by now, for the fifth and final series, we have a second weekly serving of the Luxury Podcast with genuine bonus embellishments.
Yes, we'll be back tomorrow with an even more luxurious fifth episode of our bonus release, where, continuing a theme of this episode, we'll be looking at anarchic Hyacinth. Involving Mr. Blobby and a Dutch parody.
For now, goodbye.
Goodbye.
Welcome to Sincerely Sloan, presented by Uninterrupted. I'm your host, professional tennis player, wife, parent, and entrepreneur, Sloan Stevens. As an athlete and as a person, my journey has had a lot of twists and turns, from moments of adversity and doubt to unimaginable triumph and satisfaction. Throughout the season, I'm joined by some of the biggest names in sports, entertainment, culture, and a few members of my tribe. Our conversations keep it real and push it past skin deep. We reveal the perspectives, routines, and products that allow each of us to show up at our best. Join me on my journey of self-discovery and many, many laughs along the way. Sincerely, Sloan.
Ever Googled your own name? Prepare for a shock, because your personal info, including addresses and phone numbers, is out there, especially with the recent hacks at some big phone and healthcare companies. But here's where Aura steps in. Aura scans the dark web for your sensitive information and sends real-time alerts. Aura also actively requests that your information be removed from data broker sites, putting you back in control. Aura provides you with a complete online safety toolkit, credit and transaction monitoring, a secure password manager, a privacy-enhancing VPN, parental controls, and more. Try Aura risk-free with a 14-day trial at aura.com/safety. That's aura.com/safety. Rest easy with Aura. Visit aura.com/safety today.